Well, hopefully you received a heads up in your e-newsletter this week. It's why it's important to subscribe. There's just sometimes information we need to get out during the week. And in a minute, as a part of our History Month talk, we'll be sharing some information about the word on the screen. Read it from right to left. And if you're not wanting certain people to hear that information, maybe your spouse or somebody else, make sure they're in kids' church and not in the sanctuary at this time, or not nearby if you're on the live stream right now. We'll have the speakers in the lobby and nursery off as well, starting now, just so those are safe spaces in case you need them. That may seem over the top, and I hope all adults can find a way to be in here because it's important, but I don't want anyone to be mad at me. I don't want anyone caught by surprise, so we're giving you a heads up and an exit strategy now. So History Month has now turned into History 6 weeks here, and we're in December, and we thought it would be fun, but also, as we'll see, a challenge to our spiritual discipleship in this season to finish up History Month with a little bit of the story and history behind St. Nicholas, and also known as Saint Nick, and make some application that I think is really important concerning why it matters that and how we talk about and incorporate this kind of tradition, so to speak, with our kids and grandkids. So for some of you, it's perhaps brand new information that Saint Nicholas was in fact an early church leader. Now, I will say there's lots of legend and lore mixed in with some historically verifiable events and details about this Nicholas, who was bishop of Myra near modern Turkey. And despite the lack of historical information, you can find actually whole books on his life, including university press scholarly works, trying to piece together some sort of biography of Saint Nicholas, since people, of course, have been curious about who this figure is that was eventually associated with Christmas. So I'll try to stick to only information that we're pretty sure is accurate and attested to in ancient history, and therefore we know kind of happened in some form. And that actually kind of narrows it down quite a bit. But there's no doubt that the actual person of Saint Nicholas or Nicholas did exist and was a well-known church leader in the fourth century, known especially for his generosity and secret gift giving. So as we tell this story, you'll be able to connect a few of the dots where we get some of the traditions associated with the modern Saint Nick. So Nicholas was born into a wealthy family, but after his parents died, he chose to voluntarily give away his possessions and give all he had to the poor. So the most famous story, which by all accounts did happen in some form, is the story of a poor man with three daughters who couldn't afford the required dowries, or that is, payments for to a groom's family for the daughters, which in that day was basically a guaranteed ticket into a life of poverty and probably being sold into slavery and even likely prostitution. So Nicholas finds out about their situation and, you know, not wanting to draw attention to himself and perhaps also not wanting to embarrass the family of needing charity, he goes to the house in the dark of night and he throws a bag of gold coins through an opening, probably not a chimney, but some sort of window or hole in the house. And this dowry money that the father receives helps him marry off his first daughter. And after that, Nicholas does it again. And so after the second daughter is married with the dowry, as the story goes, the father is determined to find out who is this person, who is this secret gift giver. So he stays up all night for several nights waiting to catch this person in the act, anticipating the third bag that's coming for his third daughter. And he does. He catches Nicholas in the act, and he immediately drops to his knees and thanks him profusely. But Nicholas is adamant that he not tell anyone and keep his secret gift-giving just that, a secret. So there's a lot to like about this story that should really encourage us. For example, one of the things that enhances the likelihood that this is an authentic story of an early Christian leader is that Christianity was pretty much the only religion of that time that really paid attention to the plight of women and encouraged and sought to elevate their status as important contributors in the way Nicholas did. And the same really could be said for just consideration of the poor in general. See, most cultures and people groups or religions of that time wouldn't bother saving three women from a life of prostitution or helping a poor father, for that matter, since women were just widely considered to be second-class citizens in that time. But Christians were known for being different. So I love this story of the original Saint Nick. I think we should tell it more, including to our kids. He's truly an inspirational Christian figure. But I hope you can see some of the ironies and contradictions between this Saint Nicholas and the entirely fictional and usually westernized version of jolly old Saint Nick. And I'll unpack some of them for the rest of this talk and share why I think featuring the modern Santa as a central figure of Christmas can be problematic from a Christian perspective. So let's talk about the transition from Saint, that story, to what we know today, Santa, and the Christian implications of that. So let me just start with a huge disclaimer. All right, my goal here is to just get you to think a little bit deeper about all of this. You don't have to take my advice. There is no judgment if you choose not to. This is not a primary doctrinal issue. There is freedom for difference of opinion on this. We don't sit down with prospective church members and say, "So, what are your views on Santa Claus?" And no, we don't believe Santa is just the word Satan with the letters scrambled up. So no judgment. Please don't send me an angry letter. But the Bible does call us, in 1 Peter 2:9, to be a peculiar people, which in context carries the idea that we are called to live and do things differently, to reflect deeply on what we do and what we participate in. And sometimes that challenges the dominant stories that the world lives by. And I know calling us to that will sometimes even make me a little unpopular in what I say. But we are to live our lives by a different story and a different rhythm than the world around us. And therefore, how we approach Christian holidays, like Christmas and like Easter, says a lot about what we value and communicates a lot, especially to our children and grandchildren, about what is central to our lives. So let me give you four reasons why I think it matters what we do with Santa and other things around Christmas and Easter, or really during the whole year. I'm just kind of using Santa as the example, an individual issue that addresses just a larger way of living in general, way of how to think and live our lives and what we teach our kids as Christians. So four reasons to give pause to Santa Claus. I just can't help myself. And number one is mistrust. I feel pretty confident in this reason because I actually know quite a few real examples of people raised as Christians who have a story essentially like this. My parents encouraged me to believe in Santa Claus, who was a man that I believed in but couldn't see. Someone who is all-knowing and always watching what I do. When I learned that it was all a lie, I assumed the same thing about the all-knowing God whom I was told to believe in but cannot see, and who is always watching over me. That was the end of me believing in God, which I considered a made-up story, just like Santa. Now, is every child going to react that way? Probably not, right? Some kids are more black and white or sensitive than others. But why take the risk of planting any seeds of mistrust or doubt in your kids about what you tell them and what they believe to be true? Friends, we know that in today's world, it takes very little for kids to walk away from Jesus in their teen and adult years. Many of you know this. One bad experience, one thing they're unsure about, and it snowballs. So again, why risk it over Santa? Yes, I believe imagination and stories are good for kids, essential even. But there are plenty of other ways to engage our kids' playful imagination than with Santa. Number two is mistaken priorities. So during Advent and during Christmas, we anticipate, long for, hope for, cry out for, and ultimately show excitement for not Santa's arrival, but Jesus' arrival, past, present, and future. That's what, as Christians, we should be talking about and building excitement for. I mean, who needs Santa to be excited for Christmas when you have Jesus, honestly? And I hate to step on, you know, too many toes here, but Santa can be a way to take the focus off of Jesus because it's just something people are more comfortable with, kind of like the Easter Bunny. A big, round, jolly Santa and a hopping, cute Easter Bunny are more palatable than a stinky manger or Jesus hanging on a cross. So my advice for people and families is to have other traditions that just reflect the values and story of Christmas. And everything I'm saying is not so much about don't focus on Santa as much as it is about do focus on Jesus. It's one of the reasons we place emphasis on Advent is because we want to give an alternative vision for what this season is all about. It's like we talked about last week with Luther. It's easy to complain about the secularization of Christmas and the commercialism, but what alternative are we creating? If we say Jesus is the reason for the season, then we should live like it. For example, a few years ago, I had a fairly mature Christian parent who I believe was trying to raise their kids in the faith tell me that they weren't going to be at an Advent service on a Sunday morning because it was the only time slot they could get with Santa at the mall for their kids. What does that communicate to a child about what this season is all about? Why are we giving Santa priority over worshiping Jesus? I think that's a mistaken priority. So look, it is inevitable that we will participate in the secular and commercialized version of Christmas in different ways. I'm not saying don't do that, right? You'd have to hide in your house for 2 months watching the star over and over again in order to make that happen. And full disclosure, I'll probably watch a Rudolph special or the Grinch. I'll likely even eat some Santa cookies while drinking from my Santa mug and just enjoying the coziness of Christmas, all while wearing my Santa hat Christmas morning, just so you don't think I'm a total Grinch. I want you to know I wear this on Christmas morning. It's fun. It makes me feel, you know, warm and fuzzy and all that. And I'll feel a bunch of Christmas joy while doing it. That's okay. It's okay to have fun. It's okay to be playful, to participate in the kind of cultural, commercial side of Christmas, as long as we don't mistake that for what Christmas is all about. Also be giving and receiving gifts happily, and it's a great tradition that celebrates the gift of Christ to the world. I'm not saying don't do these things. That would lead to legalism, right? And these and feelings of self-righteousness. But I am saying don't let them be the focus or what we spend most of our time, energy, money, or affections on, because those are things that reveal what we truly worship. All right, so the third item in my naughty list for Santa is this: misleading theology. I actually don't think we reflect quite enough on this. The way Santa treats kids is the antithesis of how Jesus treats us. Do you know there is nothing you can do to make God love you more? Do you know there is nothing you can do to make God love you less? You are loved beyond measure no matter what you've done. Whereas Santa's system is a works-based system. You're a good little boy, you get good gifts. You're bad, might be disappointed. And so we tell kids, you be a good little girl so that Santa can bring you lots of gifts. But the actual message of Christmas is that Jesus offers himself and salvation fully and freely to us as a gift, no matter what we have done. In fact, to put some scriptures in Santa language, Jesus seems to be particularly drawn to the naughty more than the nice, saying he's not come to call the righteous, but sinners. Furthermore, on the surface, it can look like Jesus likes, or like Jesus, it can look like Santa likes rich kids better. Put simply, to some kids, that is middle class or wealthy, Santa brings iPads and bicycles. To some kids, i.e. the poor, Santa brings toothbrushes and socks. And kids may wonder if they've done something wrong, or they may feel the injustice of the situation. And so really just being honest with them about Santa, about the socioeconomic situation of their family, I think is way easier to explain, and I think more healthy long-term. And, of course, just focusing on Jesus instead, who freely gives his grace to all who call on him, no matter how good or how bad. Now, I don't really care if my kids are good kids, whatever that means. That's not what I'm praying for them. As much as I care that they learn to lean on the abundant grace and mercy of Jesus, which more often than not will involve some bad, them going through some rough patches. So if they need to be on the naughty list in order to recognize their need for God's grace, I'm okay with that. All right, lastly, and don't worry, I'm almost done hating on Santa and all things that are fun in the world. The last reason to give pause to Santa Claus is misguided economics. The reason I like the history of St. Nicholas is that he gave to those in need. And he did so by forsaking his family wealth for the sake of others. I mean, that's a story worth telling and teaching your kids if you want to include St. Nick. A story of selfless giving rather than personal want. A story closer to Jesus, who Philippians 2, 7, and 8 made himself nothing by taking on the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, being found in appearance as a man. He humbled himself by becoming obedient even to the death on the cross. See, Christmas in honor and imitation of Christ is really to be a time of emptying of ourselves and our possessions and our privileged status more than it is about filling ourselves or adding to our possessions or showing our privileged status to the world with our extravagance. And there's a lot of irony in the modern St. Nick's association with materialism and waste and greed and consumerism and the original St. Nick's secret giving, fueled by a desire for justice for the poor and for the marginalized and for those in tough situations. So as a Christian, which St. Nick is your family going to be more excited about and decide to model? And of course, more importantly, are you going to focus on what motivated and inspired the original St. Nicholas in the first place? Which was the example of Jesus, who gave himself, emptied himself of all his heavenly privileges in order to come as a lowly baby. See, there is no actual Saint Nicholas without the example of Jesus that inspired his actions. So let's go to the source. I'm going to invite the band up, and Advent and Christmas is really just a microcosm of the battle that we face all year round, which is this: which story are you going to live your lives by? Right? Even which God will we serve? The God of culture or consumerism or the God of grace and sacrificial giving? What story is structuring our lives, our decisions, our priorities, our affections? And so we're going to close just by singing that story in the hopes that it kind of takes root as, yes, this is the story I'm going to live my life by and focus on. So let's stand and let's model, at least right now for these few minutes, that Jesus is truly the reason for the season by singing the story of his life and God's plan for the world. And then I'll come and close us.